All right, so we'll continue reading with Dion Fortune's book, The Cosmic Doctrine. This chapter is called The First Trinity. The conception of the First Trinity has many labels, many names, many concepts: Father, Son, Holy Spirit, Father, Mother, Son. But with the channeled message and teaching from Dion Fortune, from who she labeled as a blue ray master or blue ray teacher, breaks down the first trinity to more of a geometrical shape in order for our mind to comprehend the, if you remember, the prime duality, which is all there is nothing more than space and movement. And within that prime duality, there is what we call all that is, everything. But this chapter is interesting because the explanation of the first trinity can bring great clarity and understanding if we can train our mind and not inform it, as was mentioned before we opened this book. The whole synopsis of this book is to train our mind and release a lot of the stories that we have created around the concept of God and all of creation and life, because that's where a lot of times we can create within duality and pretend as creators that what appears is true, when really, when it comes down to the prime duality and all that is, everything's true. So these teachings will help identify the patterns so that we can see more clearly of all that is and how it derived and came about. The First Trinity. You have found, no doubt, that the teaching is abstruse and unfamiliar. Believe me, it is more difficult to give than to receive. For that which is described so greatly transcends the condition upon which language has built up, that the very images have to be built in your consciousness before they can be evoked by any spoken word. Here, even the Blu-ray teacher is, with the awareness and consciousness that this Blu-ray teacher has, to use our super, let's say superficial, the complexity of our language through the distortion is difficult to relay this message. That's why these images are important, because as channels, we can be a vessel for the divinity within us to get the message out for whatever degree of consciousness we're at and ready for learning about those aspects of ourself. Okay. Even I talking about this and giving my own perspective is difficult, because when we get further into these readings, we'll begin to talk about the solar logos and prime creators who create the universe, and how they became prime creators, and how the solar logos holds a focus. And yet we, as traveling atoms, we are in miniature universes, or yeah, universes. So that's why these simple concepts in the beginning of the creation of our cosmos can be very helpful. We actually go all the we tr we train our mind to go all the way back before there was a mind to actually try to focus and conceptualize these beginnings of the cosmos during this particular cycle. Okay. All right. You have to conceive of the cosmos in its primal aspect as consisting of three spinning movements. All that is nothing but movement, movement in space, pure movement for the prime movement, which gives rise to all that is, commences before there is anything to move. The cosmos then is bounded by the movement, which is called the ring pass knot. But besides the ring pass knot, there are movements in two directions. There are the ring cosmos and ring chaos, good and evil. And they are the sources of the forces which are known to you by these names. But though these forces influence that which is within the ring pass knot, they cannot pass beyond. They cannot pass beyond it. These three rings are the three primaries of the cosmos, the first trinity. That is why the supreme being is always conceived of as a trinity, and three is the fundamental number. Everything in the end is reducible to these three influences. Whatever subsequent stresses arise may be analyzed into the balancing of these three forces. The force of the ring cosmos, which tends toward the center, the force of the ring chaos, which tends toward outer space, the force of the ring pass knot, which holds the balance between them and prevents either of these forces going to extremes. Okay. All right. Ring cosmos. Ring chaos. And then ring pass knot on the outer edge. All right. That's a beginning of understanding the prime, the first trinity, the three primaries. All right. The ring pass knot, however, is derived from the ring cosmos and therefore partakes of its nature rather than of the ring chaos. Now, remember in the previous chapter when we spoke of how the positive creates a circle around the negative because a positive and a negative will not work. In other words, love cannot defeat hate. Only hate defeats hate. Love circles around hate. And then eventually the hate will flow out to the ring pass knot, return through the current of that limit back to the ring cosmos, and then the is back to its primal form. So it's not. Energy is not destroyed, it's just transferred Right. So it's important to know that the ring pass knot is derived from the ring cosmos. In a sense, they kind of work together. All right. The ring chaos must always be thought of as having its affinity with the outer space of the unmanifest and a tendency to return to unmanifestation. It looks towards the past and ever seeks the conditions of the past. Ring cosmos, we can view as positive polarity. Ring chaos, negative polarity, more of a vacuum. Ring chaos is more like a vacuum. Okay. The ring cosmos endeavors to focus as the ring chaos endeavors to diffuse. All right. The tendency of the ring cosmos is towards the future. The ring chaos can never build anything because whatever forces it may originate diffuse, unconfined into outer space. That goes back to evil defeats evil. Okay. Whatever creation evil creates, the human concept of evil creates will destroy itself. Love does not defeat evil. So the ring chaos can never build anything, but the ring cosmos, in conjunction with the ring pass knot, conserves its forces. The key word is conjunction. Ring cosmos, ring pass knot work together. For the forces which the ring cosmos radiated into the space within its circumference cannot pass out again because they are confined by the influences of the ring pass knot. Therefore, they act and interact among themselves, producing ever greater and greater elaboration of influences. All right, I'm going to go back to this one slide because if we have ring cosmos and ring chaos, they create movement here. All right, this is new movement. But after some time, some new movement from tangential movements will create more movement. But now, this new movement, in a sense, has this as old movement. So this old movement in conflict with new movement, as long as these two don't stay together, all right, which I'm trying to simplify this, then this movement will flow outward eventually. So in other words, don't eventually let go of the conflict or the for this particular movement. And this we'll call older movement flows back to the flows to the ring pass knot, gets in the current of ring pass knot, and flows right back to the center. And now, this old movement is a foundation for the new movement, which creates space and can expand. Okay. And we'll learn more about this concept as we keep reading. That's why whenever there's destruction, then there's a foundation laid for creation. All right, where are we? Let us now return to the point in time when the ring pass knot had completed its first revolution and the cosmos is in being. All right, we have the three rings all established and in place. Any form of force which it has reached the maximum momentum of its type of movement gives rise to secondary movements which serve to carry off the excess of force which it is generating. For force begets force when moving under frictionless conditions. The prime activity is movement. The secondary activity is light. The third activity is sound. We can kind of see this in a machine shop when we have a metal a round metal disc turning really fast, and then if we touch that round metal disc with a metal rod, then that's moving. The prime activity is the metal disc. And then if we touch that metal disc with a metal rod, then there's a secondary activity which creates light, right? Sparks will start flying off the metal disc and the rod after they touch. And also there is sound, which makes the metal touching metal sound. The movement of the ring cosmos sets up secondary swirls within the area of its influence. Its tendency is to draw more and more space into its spin. It cannot extend itself externally because it is limited by the sphere of the ring chaos. It therefore extends itself internally so that the spinning belt finally becomes a spinning disc, and with the center being immobile. If you can visualize this, okay, it starts out as a large ring cosmos was a large spinning ring, like a hula hoop. And then after the ring chaos provide that the ring chaos prevents the ring cosmos from expanding. And so the ring chaos, that hula hoop figure, now the expansion begins to fill within, and we have the spinning disc, which is flat and it's full of light. Or, well, yeah, for our visual image, we can visualize the ring cosmos as a flat spinning disc, since it cannot expand any further outward. The spinning disc being rotated by the secondary movement, which is light, which is, excuse me, secondary activity is light, third activity is sound. The spinning disc being rotated by the secondary movement, which is the ring pass knot, becomes the spinning sphere. All right. The interaction of the two forms of movement is naturally neutralizing. Consequently, there is a breakup of the simple movement of the disc into a series of compromises. The chief point of activity ceases to be the circumference and becomes the center. All right, so now we have a cosmos with limits, with the ring cosmos and the ring pass knot that work together. All right, but the ring chaos is needed to provide the influence of wanting to expand outward but can't go past the ring pass knot. Okay. And this causes the conflict, the which we'll see within the movement. I try not to use the word conflict, but I don't know how else to express it. The We'll just say positive and negative polarity, so that the cosmos now is shaped as this sphere. Although the ring cosmos, the ring chaos, and the ring pass knot each continue on one plane and spin in their own place, the synthesis of their movements give rise to a series of revolving radii, and these radii are the rays. All right, and now we have, with this movement, we have this light and these rays that are being constructed. You must conceive of them as a series of spinning rings linking center to circumference. So the center ring cosmos, circumference would be the ring pass knot. And these rays are like small little chain links that are linked together in their own segments, which travel outward to the ring pass knot and then reflect back. The influence of the ring cosmos in the force which caused the outgoing current to flow towards the periphery. The influence of the ring cosmos in the force which causes the current to flow towards the center. This creates the swirls. So the rays that are moving out from the center have these swirls that are created. Okay. And then they're being reflected off the ring pass knot. But the ring chaos, which causes the outgoing current to flow towards the periphery, because ring chaos, it has an attraction to outer space, outward, more of a vacuum. But the ring cosmos has an attraction towards the center, pulling back towards the center, returning to the center. And that's what causes the swirls. The center is the synthesis of all the forces and the balancing of them. It will be perceived then that upon the cosmic plane, the rays give rise to the central sun. And that's how we have the creation out of the first trinity. We have now a central sun. In the center of the disk of the ring cosmos, which we would consider primal good, and the ring chaos, primal evil, positive negative polarity, and then the ring pass knot, which would be neutral for working in correspondence with the ring cosmos. Okay. We have now arrived at a point when, in addition to the three great primaries, which are strictly external to the cosmos, they have generated, we have a purely cosmic movement, the movement of the flowing rays, the rays that flow out and return. Now, these rays, these circular rays, which are reflected back from the ring pass knot, must be thought of in pairs, each one being in special association with its opposite number, so that the true movement is in figure of eight, the outgoing flow being above in one half of the circle and below in the opposite half. Herein is a very deep truth closely related to practical occultism. Now, as the figure eight, it's not the swirl that we see here. It's more of a weaving up and under these planes of existence, these seven planes, weaving up and down, up and down, up and down. Positive, negative, positive, negative, positive, negative, that type of movement. Right? We could view a wave that in the a wave in the ocean, which is rising, more of a positive polarity, and then crashes down and splashes and goes underwater, negative polarity, and then rises again. This is the same type of movement that's going on in the cosmos with the rays and the segments. These new movements set up stresses among themselves, which give rise to a series of concentric rings of movement so that the cosmos becomes divided up into segments of influence. The movements of the spinning rays and the concentric circles are known as the great secondaries. All right. There are 12 rays and seven concentric circles. Within the segments are set up the movements, which are known as tangentials. The nearest analogy to these is the Browning movement of atoms, the intersecting of the rings, and the rays giving rise to angles, and the sharp tangential movement thus occasioned introduces a new factor into the cosmos. The Browning movement is. We have these atoms. They're very unorganized. Are not atoms yet. Okay, but we have these we this we have movement within segments of the cosmos, and the Blu-ray teacher is explaining with the analogy of the Browning movement of atoms. So an atom will move and then bounce off this atom, bounce off this atom, bounce off this atom, bounce off this atom, and just keep bouncing. And now we have this segment that's created, okay, of movement. And that's the visual image that it's trying to give us is because of all this movement. Now we have segments within the cosmos. Within these segments is when we will read later how atoms are created, what we call atoms, okay? The units of energy that we call atoms. You now perceive that we have studied three types of movement: the interaction of the primal rings, the interaction of the secondary rays and circles, the tangential movements occasioned by the opposition of the angles and the secondaries. I took this image from a previous lecture, and The reason why is because we can see how within the Hebrew language, we also have 3, 7, and 12. 3, 7, and 12 are, go back to what we were just talking about with the first Trinity. We have the three rings, right? We have the seven planes. Three rings, seven cosmic planes, 12 rays. So, there's a lot of Jewish mysticism within the Hebrew language that is understood, and that's why there's a lot of creation stories about the 22 Hebrew letters for those who can see how the creation of the cosmos is within the Hebrew language. In fact, by learning the Hebrew language, and for those who are focused on the mysteries, it can be a different degree of remembering of how the creation of the cosmos began. Whereas with this book that we are reading, it took a Blu-ray master with an awareness that even our human mind cannot even fathom, and for it to be broken down into the English language for us to try to understand. But only us who have the mental images who can understand the what's being said, and that's why each and every one of us are at different degrees of consciousness, because we can read it but still not understand it. And some of us, and it's not a complete understanding, it's more of a, does it resonate, or the images within our own mind, can those be used to help us understand what we're reading with the cosmic doctrine? But within the Kabbalah, the 22 paths of wisdom, or excuse me, 32 paths of wisdom, 22 Hebrew letters, the 10 Sephiroth minus the hidden Sephiroth. There's a lot of symbolism and understanding similar to what we're reading. Also, with the 22 major arcana when it comes to the tarot. Okay. In these 10 gentle movements, the lines of force are continually crossing each other's paths, being confined to small segments of the cosmos. Where they cross the vortex is set up by the opposing influences modifying each other's actions. There, instead of proceeding in the slight curves which give rise to enormous circles, they are deflected into a new movement and gyrating about each other, becoming relatively static, thus setting up a composite unit. Two forces, which no longer are influenced independently by the attraction of greater forces, but are influenced together. Thus, atoms are formed. Two intersecting forces setting up a vortex and gyrating about each other, instead of circling the limits of the cosmos. So tangential movements created small limitations for the movements, which eventually created the prime atoms. And the prime atoms within their movement, now we have a building block, which is called a composite. A building block for the cosmos. Those are my words, the building block. So prime atom, so it's just not spontaneously moving everywhere and ba nowhere to bounce. It the tangential movements created the simple movement, which created the composite movement. All right. The Blu-ray teacher has described the formation of the prime atom. These atoms, acting as units, likewise perceive the attraction of the units about them and begin to move in their turn. And the same process occurs again. Atoms in movement meet and gyrate, and so the process is continued. The tendency of the composite atoms is to travel towards the periphery, and of the simple atoms to remain near the center. It is thus that the planes of cosmic matter are developed. All right. There's some images that'll be shown later with the planes that go up to the seventh plane, which is the most complex, but the simplest being the second plane, where the prime atoms are these tangential movements in the beginning, but the movements become way more complex as the atoms travel the planes. Okay. To recapitulate, the primary movement of the rings, the secondary movement of the rays, the tertiary, I think's how we say it, the
Tertiary.
tertiary. The tertiary movement of the tangentials within the segments. The quaternary movement of the vortices, vortices, mouth's dry. The quinticular movement of the composite atoms. And then one refers to the absolute, two refers to the manifest, three, evolution, four, form, five, life. All right. So, yeah, that. Very dense reading. And I've read this book for a few years. And the first time I picked it up and read a lot of the concepts. We're just planting seeds for years later for me to actually have the mental images to create the understanding, the expanded awareness to hear the message and have the remembrance. And I have to admit that a lot of this ageless wisdom has been some of my saving grace because of us who are constantly monitoring our reaction and responses to ourselves based off influences and interactions with relationships. The concept's the same when we go back to the first Trinity when movement began, and then there was the influences of the ring cosmos and the ring chaos. So it's just different degrees when which creates movement and also eventually creates life. Right? And having these understandings on a subconscious or unconscious way will allow me to control my reactions based off previous responses that got me to where I am today. And that's all we're doing is we're actually growing our awareness, which will help expand our consciousness, because consciousness is memory plus reaction. We'll get into that in the next few chapters. That's all consciousness is. Consciousness is everywhere. Consciousness is what is allowing us to have this experience because everything is moving. But consciousness on an individual basis, which we're as a personality, we're growing towards our individuality. Consciousness is memory plus reaction. And so in our environment, when there's less reaction, that means we have experienced already enough to register those reactions in order to eventually reach a type of stillness. And then that's when we will, as we see in Key Zero, the fool at the edge of the cliff, we reach the edge of the cliff and we're ready for a new adventure. And we grow closer and closer to our individuality. But that'll be all for today. The next chapter is the building of the atom.